Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this very last day of March, the 31st. I've been wanting to interview Michael Pink for so long, I can't believe that I finally am after all these years. He's artistic director of the Milwaukee Ballet and has been with the ballet for over 10 years now. He trained with the Royal Ballet as a classical dancer, joined the English National Ballet in 1975, and has danced many leading roles. He is a founding director of Ballet Central and Associate Artistic Director of the Northern Ballet Theater, has won many awards for his choreography, and there's a lot going on with the ballet right now. His production of Peter Pan is going to have a national television audience airing on April 18. The spring series will be in performance starting this Thursday, and we'll hear also about next year's lineup because that has recently been announced. Michael, thank you so much. It's so nice to meet you. You've been here all these years, and I've been on the air forever, and I've never met you.
Well, quite, Kathleen, and I think it's just we were saving the best to the last, but it's not going to be the last.
All right.
Today is the beginning of the rest of our lives.
Thank you, Michael. All right, and with that, we will introduce Susan Gartella, a principal dancer with the Milwaukee Ballet. She has a really interesting background. Eventually, she'll run for office because she got a scholarship as a dance and a political science major. I love that combination. She began her dance career in Chandler, Arizona. She spent 2 years with the Milwaukee Ballet II program before joining the company. She's been featured in many roles created for her by a number of choreographers, including Michael Pink. She danced the role of Ophelia in Hamlet, Wendy in Peter Pan, and she danced in Dracula and many other shows. She is an inaugural member of the Traverse City Dance Project. Hello, Susan. Will you run for office once the dancing career is over?
Maybe one day.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love that combo. Could you not decide which direction you were going?
No, I couldn't, actually. And my dad also told me that being able to dance around the issues in politics would be a good thing. So, yeah.
Oh, I like that.
You know
that.
What? I think
That's
Susan
it.
Could get things done. I really do.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, thank you both so much. I have so much respect for what you do. I just think that ballet is... What an experience it is to go. It's beautiful to watch. What you have to do as dancers is just amazing to me. I don't know how anybody can do that, can perform that way, can do what you do with your body and the training that's involved. And it's just a wonder to behold.
It's a vocational training. It's something that you really have to want to do with all your heart and all your passion, which it's also something you have to decide to do at a very young age because the lifespan of a professional dancer is short. Mm-hmm. So you need to be starting as soon as you can. So when we think of these little kids that are dancing at age 5 and 6 and they're enjoying themselves, by the time they get to 8, they're already forming that desire in their mind that they could want to make this their profession.
By the time they're 8, Michael?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, Susan, how old were you?
I was 7 when I started.
Oh,
and I mean, it started kind of like my parents couldn't, you know, keep me from dancing, but pretty soon, within 2 years, it was what I knew I wanted to do.
I was eight years of age, and at a time when boys just didn't go into ballet, so I faced all of the challenges at school of being bullied and picked upon because I was this boy doing ballet. And, you know, we've come a long way since that time because...
Right.
People do accept the fact that the ballet is an athletic sport. You have to be an athlete and then some to be able to do a fraction of what we do and what is demanded of us as performing artists.
Well, considering how much your body changes between when you're 8 years old and when you're 18 years old, how do you even know you have a chance? If you decided age 8 that you want to do this, you may be out of the running because of how you physically develop.
There are ways. I know the Royal Ballet where I train, they actually they measure the cartilage between your bones to determine how tall you're going to be. And then your physical attributes as to whether your feet and your legs are the right shape, you can pretty much see that. But it's a very intensive orthopedical examination for you to be able to determine that.
Yeah, and in the States, we don't have that, at least not in, you know, a lot of the schools that we come from or that I came from, which I think is a good thing because I think there's a lot of us that wouldn't have made it, you know, because your body does change, but it's that... especially with women going through puberty and, you know, 12 to 14 is a really difficult time. But it's that love, it's that determination, it's that work ethic. That's why it's a lifestyle because your body is that instrument. And so everything that you do, you never get a break from that. So basically from age 10 to now, you're constantly a dancer. You know, you're constantly conditioning your body and trying to make it better even now. You know, yeah. I'm trying to work my feet, trying to change my body in a way that's better.
And tell me about all the daily kinds of demands. I mean, do you have to, for that long a period of time, always worry about if you're going to have a donut?
Yes.
Do you really?
I mean, not everyone's not the same.
Everybody should worry about having a donut.
No, I mean, there are some people that have to worry more than others. Usually if you've made it to this point, you have some of that figured out, but I am unfortunately one of those people who can't have donuts. Good thing I don't like donuts. But there's plenty of other things that I love that, I mean, it's about moderation and balance, but I have to wear a unitard in the upcoming show. And I think about that before I...
What does that mean? The all one piece thing?
It's like, yeah, it's like Lycra. It's like a bodysuit.
I see.
But all dancers in particular, of course, are their own worst enemy. And when a dancer looks at their body in the mirror, they see it not exactly how I would see it or one of my other colleagues. So they're very, very hypercritical. And in some respects, that's a good thing. You need to be. But on the other hand, it can be excessive sometimes. So the role of an artistic director and his staff, a lot of the time, is playing a sort of parental role, because as Susan highlights, people are at a very young and vulnerable age when they get into this profession. And once they start, you've got to try and help them navigate through growing as, mm-hmm. as a human, preparing them. So when they come out of the other end, which is anywhere mid-30s to 40s, that you don't have some damaged individual. You have people that are right. equipped to be able to make the next step in life and understand all of the things that they've gone mm-hmm. through. So it's any director and anybody who doesn't focus on that, I think, is less than caring about the sacrifices that young people are making to be in our profession. And in some respects, it's our obligation as directors to think about the individuals. I love dancers to be inspirational, to have wonderful imaginations. If their feet aren't quite perfect or their legs aren't quite mm-hmm. long enough, that's not so important. It's what's going on in their heart and their minds that's important, because that's what conveys them as an individual and the story we're trying to tell to our audience.
But that makes it, but you're exceptional in that regard, mm-hmm. I would imagine. I've read that about you, that you look for dancers who may not fit what is our classical norm for dancing, that you're looking for what you just
absolutely.
Beautifully described.
I want people who are passionate about wanting to do what they do and also want to be a part of the family we're creating. Mm-hmm. And contribute to that family as a whole. So our company is really a happy place to work. And any choreographer who comes and works with us, one of the first things they comment on is the atmosphere in our studio. I want the studio where we work, where we live, where we expose ourselves physically and mentally all the time. I want it to be a safe environment where people can create, they can grow, they can make mistakes and know that it's fine to do so, and that we're just stand up and carry on. So, and I think choreographers who do come in pick up on that immediately. So they relax and they comment on mm-hmm. how wonderful
how
a
nice.
Place.
Yeah. How nice. What makes it a happy place? And would you agree with Michael's description that it's a happy place to work?
Yeah, I would. I think it's one of the things that's kept me. And if you look at a lot of the dancers that have come in, we've retained so many of them. I think for one of those reasons is that it's a very nice place to work. And especially in any arts organization, and especially one that's so personal as ballet is, when your body is that instrument, it can be incredibly vulnerable. And so to have that safe environment that they've created for us is when the best work gets done. Because, like he said, you're not afraid of making a mistake. You're not afraid of being judged. And you inevitably have to do that. You have to fail so many more times in ballet than you ever succeed. And to have an environment where that's okay, so that way you can get to that next level, I think is imperative for us.
Yeah. I know you've done collaborations and you work with a Milwaukee rep. I have read that you really like mm-hmm. doing interpretations of theatrical pieces on stage, which now I understand why Peter Pan is going to be a national production. Why is that something that you really love doing, in addition to a different kind of maybe more traditional ballet, which I'm sure you also love, but this is what you really love?
It is what I really love, and I think I came to it out of a disillusionment with the world of dance. I stopped dancing at the tender age of 28 because I'd lost any confidence that it had value to me because I was just, I mean, the short version is I was in a company that was doing nearly 200 performances a year, that we were always on the road, always doing. So you had little time to rehearse and very little time to actually have conversations about why you might be doing something, what was the contribution. It was just doing it. And so it lost the mystique for me in many respects. But my background was always theatre, so I came back to it. And I vowed if I was going to stay in the profession, then I would have to find a reason for wanting to do so. And that was it, was finding that I wanted to tell nonverbal theatre through dance and try and make it work. And not as a comparison to anything else, but just as an alternative. And I do think the process of creating a story together with these wonderful dancers is as much about discovering who the characters are with the dancers. So we talk a lot. We communicate verbally to each other because it makes us convince ourselves of the depth of these characters we're playing. And then what happens is the audience will actually see on stage the depth of character, which may sound a little bit strange to the listeners to say that a dancer dances. They go on stage, they do wonderful movements, and that's it. That's all there is to it. It's so much more than that, so much more. And the more in-depth that it is that the dancer understands what they would be saying if they were speaking, the audience will communicate. So when you see Peter Pan on the 18th of April on PBS, the story will come alive for you without one single word being spoken, and to an incredible detail of conversations between two people without a single word being spoken. And that's filling every moment of your stage time with activity. People who love our Nutcracker, every year they come back and they tell me how much they love all the changes. And every year I say, guys, there aren't any changes. What you're seeing is that our brilliant, brilliant actor-dancers are interpreting their roles with the freedom that the production affords them. They are able to go on stage and make every moment feel alive, and they respond to each other. So things change, timings of things. There's so much room for them to be brilliant that every time they are so brilliant, they're convincing people it's the first time.
So how do you bring Susan Wendy alive to the stage as a full dancer, human being, without speaking? How do you interpret that?
Well, the first thing I did was I read the book. And then the second thing, it's working with Michael and having a role created on you. I was sharing it with Valerie Harmon. So the collaboration between Valerie and I, we would have conversations. Michael, you know, the three of us would have conversations. And then it comes to what feels natural and your choice. Like he said, you're thinking about what you're saying with this movement. And a lot of times Val and I would disagree on what we wanted to do in that. But to have the respect and the freedom to be able to choose, and all Michael really needs is an explanation, you know, for us to validate that choice. And that's something, that's a process that I love just as much as, you know, as technical as the technique of ballets. I love being able to inhabit a character, to make those choices, to have the freedom to make those choices, and then to change that, to play with it and see, you know, on each night, because you're reacting to other people as well. So it's, you can't just say, I've made this choice and I'm going to stay with it. You have to react to Peter or to whoever else you're interacting with. And that always makes it different and keeps it interesting.
Would you have been, I don't know when you knew this was going to be nationally televised, but would that have made you more nervous or not?
We knew.
Oh, you did know.
We did know. And I think we could tell by the rehearsal process that the staff wanted us to look our best as much as we wanted to look our best. But I mean, watching it the other day, we were at a screening, I was, and even being a part of it, but I was still blown away about like what Michael was saying, the acting, watching, because we aren't trained actors. So to watch your fellow dancers, up close-ups of their face, that they're acting so well, it really is brilliant. So it was inspiring for me. And the only thing that I can think that we would have done differently is sometimes we kind of whisper things to each other on stage while we're dancing. And
you do?
Yeah. Sometimes we have full conversations.
You do.
Well, you know, the other thing is it's so far, the Marcus Center, the audience is quite a long ways away from the action. And of course, a camera of is so much close. But I just want to pick Susan up on one thing. You are all actors and actresses, because the definition for me of a good actor is connecting with any story in a truthful and honest way, which these guys do. Because, well, any actor does. An actor has to find a way into a character, and they have to find things that will stimulate reactions that the character they're playing might feel. And what these guys do is they find all of those moments, so their acting is completely natural. Mm. And that's why it's so honest. So there is no skill in acting here. They've just prepared to do the work, to invest in the exploration of the characters. And it's my pleasure to be able to just talk to them about it. Susan's about to... I'm going to create a major new role for Susan in Mirror, which is the 15th of May this year. We premiere this production with a brand new score by Philip Feeney, who wrote Peter Pan music and Dracula and Esmeralda. Mm-hmm. We're going to be going into the studio again in a little over 7 days. And we're going to be starting this process again, which is we're going to be creating a story, a complex story. Susan's going to be playing the stepmother. Well, we all know that Snow White is supposed to be an evil stepmother. Well, I'm not sure I see her as evil. So we got some talking to do, and there's she's a young, beautiful woman, and that's the role she's playing in this. So it's beauty versus beauty. You've got the Snow White character, Nicole Teague and Susan, and they're two beautiful women. So the struggle is more about who is the fairest of them all and why it matters to be the fairest, and where did she come from, and what's the story about? So there'll be a lot of discussion about the way in which I'd like to tell this story, and there'll be a lot of what we call the backstory, story that may never make it onto the stage, but will live inside Susan's mind and will inform everything that she does, as indeed the other dancers. And that is what will make it compelling and interesting.
Fascinating. What's it like when I hear Michael say, though, I've created this for Susan? I mean, somebody's created this ballet for you. Michael created this. It's for you. Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's pretty overwhelming.
It must be. Right.
I remember when he informed me of this about a year ago, December. And it is. It's your dream as a dancer. This is what you dream about. You dream about having a role created for you originally, because that way there's no comparison, and you have that collaboration, and they're taking your strengths and making work for you. So I mean, it's a dream come true, which is cheesy, but that's kind of what we live for,
right,
you know.
I understand it. So what do you think your strengths are, and would you agree with Susan when she says what they are?
I'm going to look away now.
All right, Susan, what are your strengths? This is he's not in
here. It's a strange thing to do in front of your boss. My strengths, I think, and I think we agree on this. I want to be a genuine actor. I want to tell a story, and I want it to be in a natural way. And I think that is something that is pretty easy for me to normally do. So I think that he trusts me to tell a story and not just dance one. So I think that's one of them. And then hopefully my other strengths are the technique and the physicality and musicality and and all the things that make someone a good dancer. Obviously, you know, and we strive for more every day. But I would hope versatility as far as that goes too, being able to do various styles. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is very...
What's interesting is that you obviously are a very talented speaker as well, so you can add that to you to hear you speak. It's as though you did go into politics, and well, here you are a dancer.
It's no excuse for dancers when they're being interviewed to say, oh, I don't normally speak
because
I'm a dancer. Yeah. I have heard that said so many times, and in some of the most embarrassing situations when you're being given a major award on television, and people say, I don't normally speak because I'm a dancer. What a cop-out.
Right.
Well, that means you're a non-thinking, non-speaking dancer. Susan has a level of emotional maturity that I think will really facilitate this role. Because, again, the idea of playing the evil stepmother is a very, very complex one. There's no question that these are the meaty roles. Snow White, that's a fairly straightforward character. But it's We're calling her Claudia in this production, and that role is the one with the depth, with the confusion, with the challenges. And it's true, always the darker roles are the ones, and they're the ones that all actors want to play. Everybody wants to do Richard. Everybody wants to do Lady Macbeth. Those are the roles that have the real challenge about them. And I think Susan is more than equipped emotionally, physically, to be able to carry this off. And I have to tell you, she's got some of the most stunning costumes.
She has
got more costumes in this. She's like a walking fashion parade than anything else. So again, it pays to be evil. You see, you get the wonderful clothes as well.
Oh, surely that could be the lesson from this. It must go the other way. And when you're doing choreography for someone like Susan, are there certain moves that she does extraordinarily well, or are there certain moves that she can't do that you have to make choreography?
I've got both of them.
Right.
Every dancer, like an actor, has a unique individual style.
Right.
Susan is very flexible. She does wonderful movements. She's got lovely legs and feet. She's going to bring. I think that the most important thing is that the steps for us come out of the narrative. Therefore, the kind of movements that she will be portraying hopefully will come out of that narrative. The whole thing is very much, as in a lot of folk tales, it's very much rooted in the world of the raven, the dark raven and the white dove. So a lot of her movements, a lot of her costumes represent that of the bird. So I think that's a given, that we'll be finding ways in which she can do this. But at the same time, it's going to be incredibly sexy and incredibly physical and sensual about it, because she is seducing anybody and everybody to get what she wants. And I'm still talking about the ballet.
I should have had you on years ago. And this show is in May, right?
Yes.
That we're talking about.
May 15th, Marcus Center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for people who would like to join our conversation. I'm sure there are people listening who have seen the ballet. Maybe you saw the Peter Pan performance, or you've seen any number of Michael's shows. Michael Pink, artistic director of the Milwaukee Ballet, is with us, as is Susan Gartell, who is now a dancer, but eventually will run for office. We just don't know what her position will be. And she will be, she's plays Wendy in Peter Pan, which is on PBS coming up April 18, and she will be in this other show, which will be on May. Is it May 18?
That's May 15th through 18. That's Mirror Mirror adaptation of Snow White. Yes.
And then there's another series that's coming up starting Thursday this week, and we'll tell you about that in a moment.
Okay.
Here's how you reach our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. I'm sure many of you have studied ballet as well, and probably have been through the Milwaukee Ballet School and Academy. You have an enrollment of 1,000 students.
Over 1,000 students, yes. A nationally accredited school, is accredited by the National Association of Schools of Dance.
Yeah. To your phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to some phone calls, and we'll start with Gary in Madison. Hello, Gary.
Hi, just wanted to say how inspirational hearing your guest is for me. I've played drums out live for 55 years and have a severe back injury. I can't play out live anymore, but because of that conversation, I'm going to play today, and I'm going to dedicate a piece and send it to these folks.
Oh.
Just because the creativity... the beauty of expressing that gift that flows through us and sharing it with others is such a beautiful thing, and just so inspirational to hear this today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, thank you.
How nice. You've inspired Gary.
That's so
and
sweet.
Others as well. It really is sweet. Our number is 800-486-8655. Anne in Kenosha. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I'm a former dancer who grew up during the Balanchine era, and I just can't thank choreographers and directors like Michael enough for taking us into the acting zone and away from the 79-pound Gelsey Kirkland anorexic body. I didn't have that body type, and so my future was very, very limited at the time that I was training. And I just adore, I saw the Nutcracker last year, and I adore seeing really athletic bodies that are not just twig bodies. It makes me feel better about the profession.
So, Anne, did you really want to be a dancer? Did you want to do ballet for your life?
Yes, that's all I wanted to do. I trained from the age of 5 to 19, and I had the wrong body type, and I started to sustain some injuries. And I'm also a musician, so I turned myself to that profession. So it's also nice to hear Michael talking about the relationship with the audience, but because as a teacher, I coach my students that you're not there to show off when you're playing music on stage. You're there to have a relationship with your audience. You're there to communicate something to them. You are a vessel for something bigger than your sheer talent. So it's just wonderful to hear this attitude from such a prominent choreographer and director.
Yes. Well, it must have been a hard blow for you to have trained for all of those years, and it's wonderful that you have music and you sound pretty happy, but that could be a devastating blow to have been dancing all those years and then you realize you're not going to be in the profession.
Well, it was. You know, it took me a long time to come to terms with it, and, you know, when you're talking about the donut, I still can't eat the donut.
Oh, no. Come have coffee with me.
You know, when you have that mentality as a dancer, it follows you most of your life. I'm 51 now, and I'm still not free of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope you get free of it sometime.
And I think also that whole perception that it's a little bit like the, you know, when we look at all the billboards about what is a perfect, beautiful woman or any of this marketing that we see around it, it dictates to us what people should aspire, in theory, to be. And I think the same thing happened in the world of dance. We saw lots of pictures of these very, very skinny little dancers. And then people thought, that's it. That's what I needed to be. And here in Milwaukee Ballet, again, we are just I'm just interested in the individuals and who they are now and who they will be in the future and how they will, like Susan, hopefully one day go on to important roles that will help continue with our art, form and create a greater understanding about the kind of sacrifices we make, but also about the individual qualities that we all have. And if they can be harnessed and presented as we do at the Milwaukee Ballet, then it's a place where you will always find genuine, honest art.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anne, so much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we'd love to hear from you. Are there a certain number of every time I see ballet, the Milwaukee Ballet, and I've seen, you know, the classical works and some of the modern dancing, I am just astounded that people are able to do things with their body that I haven't seen done before, and that they're able to do that at all. I mean, it's just phenomenal what you can do. Are there a certain number of moves that all dancers must master as they're learning the craft? And then is there a whole range of creativity which will take you into expressions of the body that may be brand new?
I think the answer to that is yes, at least the first part of your question. There is definitely a set of movements that you're taught basic ballet class, ballet bar, every day is how we start it. It's an hour and a half. An hour and a half warm-up bar and class where we practice those movements, the foundation of our technique. And mastering those set of skills should give you the freedom to be able to do any style, any type of movement. So classical ballet is that foundation for all sorts of things, for modern, for jazz, for, I know coming up next year we have, a season of a bunch of classical works, and that's when these basic technical things are showcased the most. So most classical ballet is very stringent, is very technical, and you're showing your mastery of those skills in those particular ballets. Mm-hmm. And then the more contemporary stuff and the works that can be created on you need that foundation to be able to do them, but you get a little more freedom and you get to experiment with movement and push the boundaries in ways that you don't in classical ballet.
And you'll see that April 3rd through 6th at the Marcus Center, because the spring series is all about that. It's looking at what we loosely term abstract dance, which is very much about the creative process, using the individual bodies to push the boundaries of dance. And again, the reason why I'm so committed to so much new work in the abstract repertoire is because I believe that if the work is created on our dancers, not only do they have ownership, but it really does play to their strengths, and it stretches them as individuals. So it's instead of wearing secondhand clothes all the time, mm-hmm. you're getting a chance to really put have something tailor-made for you, and that really does help mm-hmm. extend the artist, extend our audience and their appreciation of the art. Because again, when people come to Milwaukee Ballet, I've always wanted them to come because it is Milwaukee Ballet. The ballet they're doing is important, but it's not the deciding factor. It's the fact that Milwaukee Ballet says something to our audience about quality, artistry, and jolly good value for money, and they will come based on those criteria mm. only. And then they'll be amazed to see Susan and her colleagues doing some extraordinary things, and yes. it is. Choreographers sometimes can be a little bit adventurous. They really want you to put your body in places where it's particularly difficult to get into and then getting out of it. Well, is a whole other story.
I would imagine. And what about audiences? You mentioned that there will be some traditional ballets, a lot of them next year. Do you have to include so many traditional ballets each season?
Life is a balance. Our diet is a balance. Everything is a balance. It's important for us as the only classical ballet company in the state to be able to really make sure that we present as wide and a varied spectrum of dance as we can and to the standard that I'm talking about. And that's, again, that's a pleasure for us to do that because it really does challenge. So next season, when we begin with Don Quixote, which is one of the great Russian ballets and is filled with wall-to-wall classical dance, there will be opportunities for every single dancer in this company to be showcased in some way or other, whether it's the girls dancing together as a beautiful quarter ballet, whether it's the standout gypsy girl or the boy and the all of these wonderful characters, and then the role of Sancho Panza and Don Quixote himself will bring this ballet to life, and the audience will come out feeling on a high because the music is fun, it's classical music, and they'll have as much fun as they have when they come to Nutcracker. And at the same time, you'll get to see all these wonderful dancers in various roles. And then we go on to the Pabst for our competition, the Genesis competition.
Oh, I love that.
I'm going to let Susan talk about that. Okay. Because I think our dancers are the really the beneficiaries of that competition.
Yeah, well, that is a series where you are sore in places you did not know existed for that reason, because they're asking you, they're pushing the limits. Mm-hmm. These are brand new, you know, innovative young choreographers that are they're experimenting with their own limits as well as ours. And so it's an experience of collaboration that you don't get very often. The other amazing thing is we each get to be on only one piece. So until we go on stage, we haven't seen what our colleagues are up to. Mm-hmm. So then you get the experience of being an audience member again, where you all of a sudden get to watch people that you take class with every day doing things that are extraordinary, because you don't see that rehearsal process. You don't see them falling down 8 times. You don't see them, you know, struggling. You just see this product that is mind-blowing, and you get inspired again about this art form. So Genesis is a treat for everyone. Everyone looks forward to it. Yeah, even though it's a competition, I feel like the personal relationships and the success that these choreographers go on to have, whether they win or lose, is extraordinary. Yeah, so, you know, everyone event. Looks for Milwaukee Ballet's Genesis competition.
Yeah, it's great. Let's go to more phone calls. Joanne in Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just listening. I was fascinated. That's why I wasn't paying attention, because I was listening. Yeah. I just wanted to comment to the woman who called and said she wanted to be a dancer, and then she found out she wasn't right for dancing and still misses it.
Yes.
One of my favorite movie stars started out as a dancer. In fact, she has her 90th birthday in the month of April, and that's Doris Day.
Ah.
She started out as a dancer, and she was on her way to a competition to see if she could get herself into showbiz as a dancer, and she had an automobile accident and broke her leg.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then she found out that she could sing, and then she found out that she could act. So her not being a dancer was a blow at first, but she turned it into something spectacular career, and I just wanted to let all the folks out there who have one direction get thwarted in their life find another direction and say, you know, you can be successful at something else. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's why we say in the profession, break a leg before a performance. No, I don't think it is. I think the same thing happened to Judy Garland. I think wasn't that Judy Garland's story as well? That she
was it really
wanted to dance, and then they suddenly got her up to sing, and the rest is definitely history.
Isn't that something? I didn't know that. She wasn't a bad dancer either.
Well, I think in those days as well.
I wanted to say hello to Michael and to Susan because I met them both during the UPATH campaign a couple of years ago, and I saw what great work they do, and I think folks should see the ballet whenever possible.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And let's go to another. This is ironic. Another Joanne from Brookfield. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Michael about Romeo and Juliet, why he changed the death scene of Tybalt from the dying dance to the drowning, if he had a reason for doing that.
Theatrically valid reason. It's a choice. You know, in the theater, what makes theater interesting is the choices that we make as actors and that the choices we make as directors in how we wish to convey the story. And in particular, something like Romeo and Juliet, of which there are numerous versions of it. So it's always just about a professional and artistic choice as to how I think the story would be better told through that decision. I was certainly looking for something that would have a shock value and would feel chilling in that moment because Romeo's actions are so unpremeditated. He's just so angry that he's making that one fatal move that we know young people are more susceptible to. And I wanted to find a way that would really just make everybody stop for a second and go, oh my goodness. And that was it. And a lot of the times people ask me about a version that they've remembered of a production. And of course, in their mind, that is the definitive version of anything. And I think it's just to remind people that art is always about the choices that the people are making. And particularly if they're good artists and interesting artists, they can make choices that really do make us think. They're thought-provoking, and they leave our audience really beginning to realize that art is an ever-evolving and wonderfully exciting thing.
Mm. Thank you, Joanne, for your call. And tell me just a little bit. I know there's not time to fully explore this, but I'm wondering, when you're doing choreography for a piece, is it something that you just visually imagine, like before you're sleeping at night, or maybe you'll dream it, or do you actually use figures on the board, or how do you do it?
Any of your listeners are more than welcome to climb into my head at this very moment in time, because I don't get much sleep. I've always maintained I don't visualize steps very well. I visualize the scene as I really think it will work, and I truly, it becomes a visual thing to me, like a video screen in my head, where I can visualize how the scene should look. And it's a lot about preparing for how you move through a story. A playwright will write the words, and you follow the words, and you'll go through the story. I have to work from a synopsis that I write, and it's very detailed, and then I think about the transitions from each scene, so that when the designer is working, he's also helping me transition between one place and another. So everything is already planned in a way that I feel confident I can drop into the story, as when you make a movie, I can drop into scene 8 and scene 17 at the same time and not lose my way and not lose the structure of the piece. And then the steps, I start to consider and work on the steps usually a few days before I go into the studio. Otherwise, I'll forget it, and I'll write copious notes that will mean nothing to anybody, not even me. But it's a lot of pressure. I want to share with you that Mirror, Mirror is a ballet that the first act is quite long. It's about 55 minutes. The second act is 45 minutes.
Dancing all that time?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, she is.
That's a long dance.
I have news for you all. I will have 24 days to create this work. Mm-hmm. 24 days with a maximum of 7 hours rehearsal time a day to create that. The last three or four of those days, we better be finished because we have to rehearse and polish everything. It is mind-numbing. When I think about that, I think, what am I doing? But I've never, in all these years, had more than that time to create anything. So I guess we get together, and it's why I enjoy the relationship I have with my dancers, because we're in this together.
Yeah.
They know the pressure I'm under, and indeed they are, because they have to learn something and retain it and move on, learn and retain and move on. So it's an incredible time of concentration, creativity, and so far, touch wood, we've come out of the other end with things like Peter Pan and Dracula.
I know, spectacular shows. Successes. But you've got to get some sleep.
Well, I don't, who needs sleep? It's vastly overrated.
To sleep so, when you're gone. Right.
You know,
yeah. Okay. More phone calls in a moment. The number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about the Milwaukee Ballet, and there's always so much going on with them. If you didn't see Peter Pan, and I didn't see it, it will be on television on PBS on April 18, which is a terrific thing. There's also the Spring Series, which is three pieces, two premieres, and it starts this Thursday in Milwaukee. And then, why don't I write down this date here? This will be May 15th.
15th through 18th, yes, Marcus Center.
May 15th through 18th, you will be able to see Susan in a performance that's getting put together right now, and everybody's nervous about it. And it should be terrific, I'm sure. More phone calls momentarily, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls now for Michael Pink, who is the artistic director and the longest serving artistic director for the Milwaukee Ballet. Susan Gartell is also with us. She has done the principal roles, Wendy and Peter Pan, and many, many other performances. And you'll be seeing her in a work that is being created just for her right now. Camille in Michigan. Hi, Camille.
Hi. I wanted to ask you if the company has its own school, and how does a student get to be in that school? And also, how old is the youngest member of your company?
How old is the youngest member of my company? I'm going to let Susan ponder on that, because I never ask a lady her age.
That's good.
The school, we do definitely, the Milwaukee Ballet School is a long-established school. It is accredited by the National Association of Schools of Dance. If you visit our website, milwaukeeballet.org, you can find out all the information about how to and where to enroll. We have students in our school really from the tender age of 3 and right the way forward. So Anne, who we spoke to earlier, who still might want to do some stretch classes, can come and do adult stretch classes in our school. There's plenty of opportunity. And really, our school is about sharing the experience of dance with students. We're not looking for the next prima ballerina, although you never know where they're going to turn up, and we're quite confident we have some wonderful talent in our school. The most important thing is that they can come and do this as a recreational thing, and if they choose thereafter to become serious, they can go all the way to becoming a principal dancer without having to veer too far away from Milwaukee Ballet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Camille, so much. At what point, let me ask this of both of you, Susan, starting with you, at what point, what did it take for you to be able to fulfill your desires to be a ballerina? And at what age, who helped you with that? Do you need somebody who really said to you, listen, you are fabulous, you're going to make it in this field, and I'm going to make sure that you do? Do you need a mentor? And at what point did you know that you had... that you were going to do this, that you had made it?
Well, I had several points where I made that decision. When I was really young, I couldn't stop dancing. So my parents
really?
Were like, we're going to throw her into ballet. Mm. And I loved it. Mm. And I think that I had some natural aptitude for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined a youth ballet company. And kind of a story similar to Michael's, but I was much younger. I got injured when I was 15. Mm. And I was off for a couple months. And you put so much time into this art form. You know, it was, I didn't have any social life. I didn't have any friends. It was just...
Oh, Susan.
Oh, I mean, no, it's okay. I had ballet
friends.
We
love
friends.
Her now.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's like training for the Olympics. It takes up all your time.
Right, I'm sure.
So I was out of ballet long enough to realize what I was missing.
Mm.
And there was so much pressure on me to look a certain way, to be, you know. And I decided I want to be a normal girl. I want to be a normal kid. So I stopped dancing for 3 years.
Oh, really?
And I only started dancing from 15 to 18. I stopped, which I'm incredibly fortunate to still be dancing. And so I had a kind of a rebirth when I went to school, when I went to university, and I realized I was anonymous. I could be any dancer. I wasn't Susan who could only do this. I could be Susan the Turner, Susan the, you know, it was this freedom, and I realized why I wanted to do it, that I truly loved it. And then there was this big push to, I'm old and I have to do this right now. you need people that believe in you as well.
Right, I'm sure.
And I couldn't have done that without my parents, you know, obviously, because you need someone to drive you to ballet every day,
oh,
and you need someone
yes.
to...
And you need discipline and dedication and focus. And Susan stepping away from it just to realize how much she loved it and needed it. And it was a part of it, was a moment of growing up for her, because she was then determined to succeed. And she has.
Yeah, and I don't think I would be a dancer if I hadn't, you know, I don't think I'd still be doing
this. And how about you, Michael? Did you have a mentor?
In terms of choreography and staging and such forth, I seem to fall into the laps of all these well-established and well-heeled choreographers and people in England who wanted to help me and expose me to a lot of wonderful things. But I cherished every moment of that, because there were some great, great people, Rudolf Nureyev and Sir Frederick Ashton and Dame Ninette de Valois. These are all iconic people in the English ballet scene. But later on, I began to realize that, you know, so many people in our profession feel like they would like to manufacture somebody. They would like to pick somebody out and decide, you're going to be the next Balanchine, you're going to be the next Baryshnikov. And I find that a little sort of insincere in some ways. And I think it's just a need to fill the space, as opposed to allowing your talent to go where it needs to go and wants to go and drives it. And I think about that. I mean, one of the major successes of this company is working with the team of people who bring their incredible talent. So I talk about David Grill, who's our lighting designer. He works with us all the time. Mm-hmm. David makes sure that you, the audience, can see it. If you can't see it, you can't react to it. David's works. He teaches at Purchase. He's also the guy that does all the halftime lighting of the Super Bowl. He does Panamanian games. This man does some of the most incredibly complex and huge-scale work. What does he love doing more than anything else? Working for the ballet. He has a real affinity with what we're doing. He helps us to understand that. Todd Ivans, who's the designer for Mirror Mirror, is a theatre designer. He's currently working at the Rep. He's doing the History of Vulnerability that's just about to open. Todd's bringing his skills, his incredible world of creativity, to the world of ballet. So we're getting this wonderful crossover. So all of this means that if you have a team, a complete team of people who all think alike and want to achieve the same thing, you can do amazing things. And those amazing things are the things you see on stage in Milwaukee Ballet. So next season, when you come back to see Giselle, which is a beautiful classical ballet, some of the most exquisite pure classical dance, you will see Giselle. Instead of seeing it in 1840, it's set in 1940. And I can hear people already going, oh, why 1940? Because 1940 is relative to our generation. Mm. We can all relate to that, because we are still feeling the effects of the impact of the 1940s. Yes. So why not take classical ballet, preserve the beautiful steps and all the challenges that our beautiful dancers can perform, and move it into a time frame when it becomes a little bit more relevant to say to our audience, classical dance has a relevance and a place in our history. It's not something that lives in the past. And we finish our season with Cinderella, because, again, the magic, as with Mirror Mirror, the magic of dance is telling stories, and fairy stories, fairy tales, are the ones that really do work well, because people love to come. And children love the dance because there's no words. You don't have those complicated words. Mm-hmm. You can't understand. You can't hear. You come, you have this incredible imagination that sees the way in which a dancer interprets a story. And you, in your mind, in your world, you interpret that. And you fill the words in your mind. So when people say to us, is dance appropriate for certain age groups and so forth, it's appropriate for everybody. You need no prior skill. Men out there, you need to come and see.
Let's talk to men.
Men, you need to come and see dance, because I can tell you, the guys in the dance are incredibly physically fit. The women are just drop-dead gorgeous and beautiful. And who wouldn't want to come see it? They're the beautiful people. And the whole experience is one that you get physically involved. And hey, you don't have to share your feelings with anybody. You can quietly go. You can quietly go away and say, "Do you know what? I quite like that. I'm coming back." Keep it a secret. Whatever you do, but make sure you come, because I guarantee you, the experience will be life changing. I've yet to see a guy walk out of the ballet and looking as disinterested as he was when he walked in.
And it's also, whenever I go to the ballet, I told you before the show, my husband is a sports reporter. He's at the ball game, so he's not listening. It's okay. But, you know, he covers the Super Bowl, and he has all these events. Well, go to the ballet. And every time I go to the ballet with my female friends, we always say, I wish our husbands would go to this. And I'd like to say to my son, you know, you would really get a lot of kudos if you took a date to the ballet. Why don't you know it's a whole world that's open to men? By golly,
listen,
take advantage of it.
My 13-year-old boy is always bringing his classmates to the ballet, and they all get into the whole thing, which is they had no idea. And that's the beauty of education, is until we get to the kids and we can show them these things and get them to experience this, they will have no idea. Yeah. So we have a responsibility to make sure they have access to.
I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. This has been a delightful hour. Thank you both so much. It was really good to meet you
and
finally do an interview with you. All the best. I can't wait to see your show now.
Thank you.
It's so much fun. And we should give an email address in case you want any more information about it's the MilwaukeeBallet.org. It's a way to go, and you can get all the information. Thank you both so much for being with us. That was fun, wasn't it? Our thanks to Michael Pink. He's the longest-serving artistic director in the Milwaukee Ballet's history, Susan Gartel, and you'll be able to see her in Peter Pan on April 18 and Mirror Mirror in May. So get more information on the website. Tomorrow we'll be with you at 1 o'clock talking about the Keystone XL pipeline. At 2 o'clock tomorrow, several veterans will talk about their struggles to reintegrate after returning from war. We'll have an author with us, and we'll have two Milwaukee vets who walked from Milwaukee to Los Angeles to promote awareness of issues affecting veterans and their families. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show and for doing on-air production as well. And thank you for listening.